You're with Clement Maniatella.
702.
So, I have been hosting ambassadors on the show over the last couple of weeks. And today, we have in studio with us the Russian ambassador to South Africa, Ilya Igorovich Rogashov. Did I pronounce that right?
That's great, yes.
Great, because I've been practicing it this whole morning. So this is the third ambassador we are hosting. We started with the UK ambassador. We had the US ambassador on the show. And today we're focusing on South Africa's relations with the Russian Federation, because as the two nations, we are sharing long-standing history of collaboration in political, that's informed by economic, social, defense and security cooperation. So this is a conversation that we have between now and 11 o'clock. If you've got your own inputs, you know, you can give us a call on 011-883-0702. The WhatsApp line is 072-702-1702. Ambassador, thank you so much for making time for us. Welcome to 702.
Good morning, and it's great to be here.
Yeah. You have been here for how long now in South Africa? Over 4 years?
Over 4 years, 4.5 years. Yes.
And how are you finding it?
Fantastic.
Yeah?
Fantastic.
The weather great?
Both professionally and to live, to country for living. I think it is very comfortable, very interesting.
Mm, yes.
Sometimes breathtaking.
Breathtaking?
Yeah.
What, our politics?
When you go to Kruger Park, no.
Oh, okay. Everybody loves, yeah. I think the UK High Commissioner as well mentioned the Kruger. Mm-hmm. He loves the Kruger. Do you find that a lot of people who come from Russia prefer to go to the bushes to see the Big Five? Is that what they enjoy about South Africa?
Yes, I think so. Mm. This is one of the main attractions. Mm. If not the main attraction.
Mm.
And well, the flora and fauna are quite different in our countries.
Yeah.
So it is of great interest for the kids, but also for adults, of course.
Yeah. I want us to start off by just congratulating you as the Russian Federation. You guys recently had elections. I saw President Vladimir Putin won elections with 88%. He's now, what, Russia's longest-serving leader in how many years now? More than 200 years?
Well, according to what I've read in the press, yes, 200. I never counted myself, but yes, this is what they say.
Yeah. No, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So, our relations with Russia. Maybe let's help the listeners understand where our relationship starts between South Africa and Russia, because as the USSR, there was a time that you were helping the ANC during apartheid, where you were assisting with finances, you were assisting with military intelligence support to the anti-apartheid movement back already in the 1960s. What underpins this relationship, and where does it come from between Russia and South Africa?
Well, yes, USSR assisted in many respects all peoples of Africa in fighting against colonial oppression. And this process of decolonization is the starting point, we think, with for our relationship in modern times, right now, it is a sort of predetermines our relationship today. The Soviet Union is remembered to have supported liberation struggle, providing, as you mentioned, financial, technical support, humanitarian assistance, but it also performed some personnel, provided some personnel training, and that was for ideological purposes, of course, because you mentioned the assistance to ANC, but to other parties and to other liberation movements as well, and that was part of the ideological policy of the CPSU, Communist Party of the Soviet Union at that time. But it was very much in conformity with the mentality of the Soviet and now Russian people. As you know, some say that Russians live not by by heart, rather than intellectually. So our emotions come first, and our emotions, our hearts, told us to support people who are oppressed. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very visible and traceable throughout Russian history.
Yeah. Where do you place our diplomatic relations now? What are the current bilateral relations between South Africa and Russia? How are we benefiting from each other?
Well, we benefit in many different respects. First of all, let me mention that there is such a ground-laying paper as concept of the foreign policy of the Russian Federation, which was approved in March last year, 2023, that enshrines Moscow's serious commitment to African partners, to Africa in general. And then, of course, there is a bilateral element aspect of this, and our bilateral relations are shaped in accordance with the other couple of documents, mm-hmm. like the Treaty on Friendship and Partnership, I think, of 2006. Mm. And then there was a joint declaration on the establishment of a comprehensive strategic partnership between Russia and South Africa in 2013. So now, when we characterize our bilateral relationship, we refer, first of all, to this formula, strategic partnership.
Mm.
And that means a lot, actually. On different levels, that determines our cooperation. First of all, if we begin with the general overview, with the global level, it is absolutely necessary to mention that our countries share the view of the future world, the world we will like to live in and we will live in, which is a polycentric world, without the dominance of a single power or a single bloc, mm-hmm. of states, based on the mutual respect for the sovereignty, for the will of people to choose freely the path of development for themselves, equality of all states, with a central coordinating role of the United Nations and its Security Council, and international respect for international law, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So these approaches, these common approaches, dictate a high level of cooperation and coordination between our foreign affairs representatives in different formats. First of all, of course, we should mention BRICS, but also the UN, the G20 formats.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we can be quite positive about our interaction in these formats and in other international organizations. As let's take, for example, BRICS. Last year's South African presidency was quite successful in a number of elements. And the most significant achievement was, of course, the BRICS expansion. And Russia supported South African chairmanship in many of its beginnings in during the last year, and took over BRICS chairmanship from South Africa. And it was agreed that we will carry on implementation of those projects that were started by the South African presidency.
Mm-hmm.
But also we have very good coordination in different other organizations, as I said, in the UN in particular, And to give you an example, we support a UNSC reform as it concerns the expansion of the representation of African, Latin American, and Asian countries as permanent members, perhaps. We certainly feel that the presence and the impact and the role of these countries should be strengthened in global affairs, given the emerging multipolar world order. But I can go on with examples. But just to illustrate.
We'll come back to some of those. I'm interested in some of the things you've said, in the kind of common approaches that we share as South Africa and Russia. And you've mentioned that both Russia and South Africa want to see a world without the dominance of one particular power. And I'm interested to hear, as a Russian ambassador on this continent, what your assessment of that unipolar dominance of the West, what the impact of that has been on the continent of Africa. Because as you say, being part of BRICS, that's probably an opportunity to try and end that unipolar dominance, and you're introducing this multipolar democratic order that belongs to the majority of people on Earth. What's your assessment of how this global architecture has been, where the West dominates, in terms of what the impact has been in Africa?
Well, I think that this policy can be traced for centuries back, in effect. It used to be colonialism, when commodities have been physically moved from the colonies, including African continent, to metropolis. Then slavery. But there are now, actually, there are more subtle, more intelligently constructed policies, which are called neo-colonialism. And the overall effect of this is the slowing down of the development of former colonies or neo-colonies, and countries that are on the African continent in particular. Methods are different, but goals are the same. It's to provide better living conditions for the so-called golden billion at the expense of the rest of the world.
What is the golden building?
Billion.
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 Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, mispronounced.
So you think there are ways that the West still is somehow in charge on the continent for a particular goal, and sometimes they slow down the development and progression of this continent for a particular goal?
Exactly. It's not, by chance that there is so much talk, in particular in BRICS, but also other developing world organizations, the Global South, the Global East, as they say now, as well, about the need to reform global governance system. The one that was designed a few decades ago under the auspices of the Western world is actually used to pursue the same goals, the same colonial goals. This is part of neo-colonial policies. We need to reform global financial institutions. And we need to reform other global governance institutions. But financial is in the, I think, the most important one. We should level the chances of participation of all peoples, states and peoples, in global governance. And that should be used in favor for advanced development of the least developed states and well, in particular, to serve the goals of the African 2063 agenda and so on.
Mm. There are some people on the continent, some experts as well, who feel that as much as it's important to look at restructuring, you know, the global order as we've known it to be, like you, and of course they do admit that BRICS is one of the ways that is going to help in changing that global architecture. Some of them have a concern that the China and Russia, when you look at their prevalence on the continent now, are possibly going to be a replacement of the West. So in other words, yes, it's great that we talk about the need to start seeing what the West influence is on the continent and start asserting our authority as Africans. But at the same time, you also want to be quite careful of the prevalence of Russia and China on the continent. What do you say to people who are concerned about what your expansion of your friendship and commitment to this continent, like together with China as well, could actually mean for the African continent?
Or what it would mean for us? Well, I will let the Chinese ambassador, the future Chinese ambassador, to be nominated to South Africa to speak for China. But I think I can already say that the Russian and Chinese policies vis-à-vis African continent are quite different from the Western policies. First of all, because we are not seeking unilateral advantages. We're looking for lucrative business relationship, bilaterally advantages, and we're ready to develop our relations in many different areas for the benefit of the progress and development of all countries. We do not need African resources, mineral resources. We want to do business. We want to establish better humanitarian contacts, cultural contacts. We have a lot to offer, and we want to learn and to see what others can offer and give to us in this sense. And there are many areas that such cooperation between Russia and South Africa, Russia and other African countries, looks very, very promising.
I want to ask about, in the context of Africa, the Wagner Group, because that's been another concern by some of the experts when they look at what their role has been on the continent. You know, when you look at countries that have seen war, that have seen instability, sometimes in those countries we are told of how it's the Wagner Group that somehow deploys the paramilitary forces, that are running disinformation campaigns, they are propping up, you know, influential political leaders. Can you help us understand what the role of the Wagner Group is, where it has been deployed on the continent, and how does it speak to that commitment that Russia speaks of to the continent?
Well, I think that it is 100% proof of that very same commitment that we have mentioned. First of all, there is no Wagner Group as such anymore, but there will be some different structures that will perform these functions. But again, it's Wagner personnel was deployed in several countries according to the requests of the leaders of these countries, not against the will of the people of these countries. And you've mentioned war, situation of some internal conflicts and so on. But look at what have Wagner in particular has achieved in these countries. They are bringing stability. They are bringing, if not 100% peace, and prosperity, but certainly there are in few months that there have been in Mali, for example, the successes in stabilizing the internal situation, in fighting insurgency in the north of the country, insurgency that used to control more than half of the territory of Mali. These successes are obvious. And this is what the French military mission there could not achieve in several years. The same goes for Central African Republic. But again, the main feature is that when Wagner goes, only when the leadership of a government of a state requests Russian Federation to assist in this and that area. So there are constitutional limitations to send armed forces, to send our military.
I was about to ask, how do you manage that? Because, you know, you can't just send the army to a sovereign country. But
yes,
so what are the limitations for you?
So there are limitations. I do not know exactly.
Yeah.
I'm not an expert in this area. But I know I can say that because of the limitations on the use of armed forces, the paramilitary have been contracted to provide, to fulfill certain functions in the area of security. And what I'm saying is that they have been quite successful. And look at the examples of Central African Republic and Mali and maybe a couple of other countries. That they are, they do not want Wagner out. On to the contrary, more and more states address Russia with similar requests, and we will do everything in our power to help to bring stability and peace to the countries that need it. But in general, Russian foreign policy towards African countries is based on one principle: African solutions to the African problems. And we do not interfere where we are not asked to. And we do not interfere sometimes even when we are asked to, because we think that it's for some reason it is inappropriate, and that this or that country can manage itself with some assistance, perhaps in other terms. But that's the big difference. We try to be helpful and not to seize control, or to, you know, prescribe some recipes, including in international affairs, to the countries that ask us for assistance.
Okay, that's exactly 10:30.
7:02. The Clement Magnatella Show. Let's walk the talk.
It's 25 minutes before 11 o'clock. We are in conversation with the Russian ambassador to South Africa. I do have some of your questions coming through, some inputs as well. I'll get to them in a moment. Ambassador, there is someone who wants to ask about, because as we were talking about the Wagner Group, someone is asking, please can you ask the ambassador if the Wagner Group can help in the DRC? I'm not sure if you've been following the conflict in the DRC. It's claimed a number of lives, including the lives of our soldiers who were there as part of the Southern African Peace Mission. So that's the conflict that's ongoing there in the DRC. You did indicate earlier that you only intervene when you are being requested to do so by the countries involved. So has the DRC reached out to you? Has there been interest? Because they seem to be struggling to deal with the insurgency in that country.
I'm sorry to say, but this question flies well above my head. I don't know. I have my hands full with Russian-South African relationship, bilateral and some foreign policy issues, of course. But I can state once again that we always fully support Africans in their decisions vis-à-vis their own continent. One of the important aspects of our assistance to decolonizing Africa, actually, was also a diplomatic support. And people often omit this aspect, in particular because mostly experts know about the very difficult negotiations that often take place in the United Nations when some draft resolution is being prepared and negotiated, which appears or not appears in the printed version, and there are many other agenda items that UNSC considers without adopting necessarily some kind of an outcome document. So including such instrument, a same label as undemocratic, as veto power, it was used on many occasions in the interests of developing countries in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and even now. There are sometimes very difficult, very heavy diplomatic battles, so to speak. And this is also one aspect in which we support African solutions. So Africans should take the lead in resolving the crisis in DRC. I know that it's been a long one, long-lasting, with numerous casualties that did not attract so much attention from the Western world, actually. But we stand ready to assist both internationally and on the spot.
So there's a lot of aid that often comes from the West, whether it's aid from Europe to help us with our programs, whether it's HIV and AIDS, whether it's aid or money that's been committed towards decarbonization, the US as well. If you look at our trade relations with the US, what do you say to South Africans who are listening to us now and they say, sure, we appreciate the friendship that we have with Russia, but in instances where we are at odds with the United States, for instance, we need to look at the bottom line. We need to look at the trade relations. And when you look at the trade relations, there's a lot of money that flows between South Africa and the U.S. They're investing in this country more than Russia is. So they are one of our top trading partners. So what do you say to South Africans who say, well, at the end of the day, we need to go with people that we know there's actually mutual benefit that also helps us with our economy, with job creation, as opposed to go with just an emotion of friendship that started back in the 1960s?
Well, there are several comments to that. And I would begin by saying that the current state of economic interaction between Russia and South Africa is to a large extent the consequence of, well, historically predetermined, let's put it that way. Many of, a great number, actually, of Western companies are very well established here, and they operate for decades, and the production and the employment may be considerable. So in some instances, we feel that they simply do not want some competitors from Russia or China to that effect, I can mention. Some mutually beneficial projects were not realized because of some unfair competition practices that are exercised here. Sometimes we feel that. But otherwise, what is the difference between cooperating with Russia and with the United States, for example? We never attach any political conditions to our economic relationship. To give you an example to the contrary, remember the AGOA. And I know how much South African officials are now preoccupied with this aspect, as Americans use this, use in general economic ties, but also US dollar per se as a leverage in bilateral relationship. So cooperation, economic cooperation with Russia is free of this. And that's the biggest plus of doing business with us. Now, of course, I'm not calling on South Africans to wrap up their economic relationship with the United States or any other Western countries. To the contrary, we think that this is a very positive development, and this is in which we would like to participate. But let's remember economic sanctions. Again, as a proof that the West uses economic ties as a tool. Russia is the most economically sanctioned country in human history. We have more than 19,000 individual sanctioning measures introduced against us. But there are also secondary sanctions that threaten others, including South Africa. And again, this attitude endangers the development, economic development of South Africa. This is not the way to pursue. This is what we're against. We, in particular within BRICS, but we, within also other formats, we try, we do our best to introduce system of economic cooperation, beginning with the new development BRICS Bank, that would be free of this. So no political conditions attached to economic ties with Russia, to summarize.
Do you think what happened, was it a year ago or 2 years ago, when the U.S. ambassador to South Africa claimed that South Africa had supplied arms to Russia to use? Is it funny?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yes, of course I remember.
Our government investigated and they found out that that was not true. And I've had the U.S. ambassador in studio and I've asked him if he wants to apologize. And he's indicated to me that he's already apologized to the international, well, to our government for how he has raised those issues. But I don't think he's apologizing for making the claim. Do you think, in your view, given what you've just said about the U.S. using the rand, sometimes using the economic ties as leverage, do you think that was the U.S. trying to put pressure on South Africa to change their quote-unquote non-aligned stance on this war in Ukraine?
Well, you know, I have only one comment in this regard, and this is that I regret that Samurai Code of Honor does not stand anymore, at least with the U.S. officials.
The code of honor.
Yes.
Okay. Let me take some calls now. Let's go to Stephen, who's calling us from Centurion. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning, Clement. How are you, sir?
I'm all right, man. Go ahead. I'm going to ask you, Stephen, to just speak a bit slow so that the ambassador will be able to hear your question.
That's all right, Clement. Look, man, I just want to check if Russia is planning now or in the near future to form alliance with other countries that are really, really abused by America, those countries that are outside NATO, to form alliance that will deal with the issues or counter American aggression militarily or economically. Because America use their power economically to, you know, punish other countries that they don't, you know, support them. So is there any way that Russia is planning to mobilize the countries and form alliance? Thank you, Clement.
So a security alliance. All right. Thank you so much, Stephen, for your question. Ambassador, are there plans to form some kind of a NATO, some security alliance with other countries?
Well, I can answer that way, that the more pressure the West exercises on other countries, in be it in economic area, financially, using, again, the US dollar, or militarily in the area of security interests, the more the other countries on the other side are pushed to cooperate in order to withstand this pressure from the U.S. side. Now, this is an objective process. I think that it always or almost happens like that. Take the U.S. dollar. So they use it as a weapon. I mean, Western media narrative is that Russia weaponizes everything. Now, the West has weaponized economic relations. The West has weaponized U.S. dollar and euro. So there is, as a response to this aggravation, there is a move towards de-dollarization that are now supported by major economies, in particular in BRICS. But it is, this phenomenon is not limited to BRICS, of course. Same to the economic cooperation in general. Countries are becoming more cautious about developing such ties because they watch, in particular, the situation with the Russian foreign assets being frozen in a number of countries. There are different estimates, but experts usually give it to $200 billion to $300 billion U.S. dollars in equivalent, perhaps in gold and so on, and other assets. But that means that such a thing can happen to any other country who would become, for this or that reason, seen as not friendly by the United States or in the West in general. I am putting everything very mildly.
So
others are becoming more cautious about it.
Yeah.
And this is a response. This is not an initiative that comes from Russia. And the same is true, of course, for the area of security. So it is a response to the pressure that the West exercises in the attempts to prolong its dominance in the world.
Someone else would argue that you use the same influence as well. So, and I understand what you mean about other countries using whether it's economic ties for leverage. But are you, as Russia, not using your military might as well in the case of Ukraine, for instance, having invaded Ukraine as a sovereign state that wanted to join NATO? Do you not think that's an action that uses, because you know how powerful you are militarily as Russia, and you can go and invade Ukraine because there are disagreements around the expansion of NATO and what Ukraine plans to do around joining that military, that security alliance?
Well, I thank you for choosing your words carefully in asking this question. But still, there is a good deal of Western narrative in it. Because, first of all, it's not about Ukraine so much. Ukraine is a piece of puzzle which is collective security interests in particular, well, globally, but also in Europe in particular. And we did our best to prevent NATO from expanding, from involving post-Soviet states, former Soviet republics. And we tried to address all kinds of security elements diplomatically. In particular, on the 15th of December 2015, when we sent out two draft treaties to United States, to Washington and to Brussels for NATO consideration, which would take care of all these problems. As you know, there were no negotiations. They were simply brushed aside by the West. And so we had to do it. It came to the special military operation in Ukraine. Of course, we didn't want to do. We wanted to avoid this.
Was there no other choice?
We were compelled to commit this. Yes. Again, the fighting in Ukraine is not about Ukraine per se. I'm very sorry to say that, to speak about our brother Slavs who are Orthodox Christians and so on and so forth, and we basically speak the same language, very similar at least, and so on. I think that the situation was summarized perfectly by a previous Polish Prime Minister, Morawiecki, about a year ago, who said something like, it's not about Ukraine. If Ukraine is defeated, it will be the end of the Western dominance, of the Western Golden Age, he said. It's not word-by-word quotation, but it's pretty much very, very much like it. So, again, this should be considered in a broader context. And this is the key for understanding of this situation. And it's not by chance that Western media impose this narrative and try to make all their information consumers to look at it as an isolated episode, that this is unprovoked, unjustified aggression of a sovereign country. Of course, it is not unprovoked if you start looking at it in a historic perspective, in the perspective of a global strategic security. It is not aggression, it is not war, because it is not war, because the purposes are pretty much limited. Ukraine is not a sovereign country, after all.
Is it not a sovereign country?
No. At least since 2014, but maybe earlier than that, it is not a sovereign country. The decisions of foreign policy decisions, internal policy decisions are taken elsewhere. They are dictated. Unfortunately, many Ukrainians have agreed to play this role of being proxy in conflict with Russia. And the purposes of this conflict were formulated and repeated on innumerable occasions by different Western leaders, that it is to defeat Russia, to inflict strategic defeat to Russia, to harm Russia, to harm Russia militarily, and so on and so on. So this was part that Ukraine plays of a military impact on Russia. Then sanctions were supposed to play an economic part of it. And altogether, this was supposed to lead to some protests in Moscow in order to remove President Putin from power, to change, as they say, the Putin's regime.
Okay. Let's take some calls now quickly before I've got a few listeners that have been holding for a while. Let's start with you, George, in Eden Park. Go ahead quickly, please.
Okay, thank you. Man, I'd like to thank Russia, especially the President Vladimir Putin. I hope God keeps him and his country becomes very strong and be able to stop this aggression of America, because America has engineered so many wars around the world, in Libya. Today they're busy in Gaza and they're busy in Ukraine. I hope that country becomes stronger by the day, so that somehow, because Russia has never attacked the African people the way the Europeans have been doing.
Got it.
So I say, may God bless you all.
Thank you so much, George. Saul, you're calling us from Highlands North. Good morning.
Good morning. I'll be very concise. I'd just like the ambassador comment on Russia's human rights vis-a-vis their opponents. For example, Navalny, that was poisoned in and had treatment in Germany, then got tried and went to Siberia and then died. Various other opponents that are banned from standing in elections.
Got it.
An opponent of Putin living in the UK a few years ago, getting poisoned and killed by security agents from Russia.
Got it. Saul, thank you for the question. Arola in Pretoria, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, Ambassador.
Yeah, go ahead, Arola.
Yes, I would like to say congratulations to the President Putin and all the people of Russia about the successful elections that you had. But what I also wanted to thank the Russian people and the Russian government. During the struggle, I was a member of operations in Botswana. And when the Kamaz truck was being marketed in Africa and earth-moving equipment, I was offered this equipment to use as I see fit.
Mm.
And I stockpiled a lot of gravel for the Botswana government, which they were using. I was based in Serowe, which is the capital, you know, place of the Bangwatu people.
Oh, great. Arola, thank you so much. Arola in Pretoria. Ambassador, many of the calls were just appreciating and thanking Russia and congratulating you on the elections, but there was a specific questions about your track record as Russia when it comes to human rights, and the listener mentioned the death of Navalny in prison.
Yes. First of all, I would like to acknowledge these congratulations. Thank you guys very much. We appreciate it very much. I should say that the results that came, 87% plus of the voters with a 77% turnout, is a great result, unachievable, unthinkable for many Western leaders, for one simple reason, because they do not perform in the best interests of their nations and the best interests of their people. In Russia, we have the voting system, electoral system, which provides for direct voting for the president. And the results that came in, they fully in conformity with the polls conducted by many different organizations, sympathetic to President Putin, unsympathetic to him. But the results are very predictable. Nobody could deny that. And the unity that was shown by Russian people is of course, this is a real fact of life, and to a certain extent, to a result of this external pressure.
And on Navalny?
And on Navalny, well, the guy was jailed for a criminal offense as he stripped a French company working in Russia for some cash. The company doesn't deny it. So it was a very regular, you know, criminal case. For the poisoning, I think that the question was formulated with a very large, uncorroborated admissions. Now, nobody proved that either him or someone else whom the listener referred to were poisoned by Russia. And there are many, many, many unanswered questions in every such instance that we would like to clarify for ourselves. As for Navalny dying in the camp, it was a clot. So I can give you a hint. He was, during the pandemic, COVID pandemic, he was vaccinized 5 times by Pfizer.
So your investigations are that he died from that clot as a result of that?
He died from the clot. I do not insist that that was a result of...
Okay.
So, and even some ferociously anti-Russian people, like head of Ukrainian military intelligence, Kirill Budanov, accepted that. He said, I'm afraid I will disappoint you, but Navalny died of natural causes, as far as he knows.
All right, Ambassador, we are out of time. Thank you so much for making time for us. It was great to engage with you.
Thank you. Anytime.